You're listening to the Primetime Roundup Podcast. And now here's your host, Walker.
It is episode 79, the Primetime Roundup Podcast. So much to talk about today. I'm so glad to be back. I am Walker from Georgia's own Walker and Macy. Alongside, on the phone, I should say. It would be nice if you were here. You should just come hang out sometime. On the phone, we've got TV enthusiast, fan, expert, and the only man that can drink wine with Victor Strand, talking about Rick Hammond, also known as the Moose. This episode of Fear the Walking Dead saw Victor Strand get really, really drunk.
And I almost expected Victor to go hang out with Mike from Better Call Saul. Like, this whole episode of him chilling on the couch, drinking wine.
He put down like two bottles in the episode. I loved it. And then I love how John Dory comes and asks him to help him with something. And he gives John Dory his keys. And he's like, here, man, you got to drive. I've been drinking. As if they're right. Cops in the zombie.
I know that was my first thought. I'm like, wow, you literally, not that you're worried about the law, but can't drive.
That was a great line. We'll get back to this a little bit later, but that was a great line when John Dory says, you know, I used to be a cop, and he says, well, I used to be a millionaire. We all used to be something.
Right.
All right, so we talk about TV and movies. That's what we do here on the podcast. Subscribe. We would love that. Right there on iTunes, Primetime Roundup Podcast. And if you're finding us on Twitter or Facebook, give us a like. Give it a share. Tell us what you want to hear about moving forward. We love TV shows and always love to discover new ones, so let us know what you're watching. What I'm watching right now is a whole lot of Sharp Objects. This show I am completely obsessed with. I'm so obsessed that I went out this week and got the book. I'm probably a little late because what I want to do now is finish the book before the season finale so that I know what happened because I got tired of waiting to find out. But I don't know if I'm going to make it. I don't read that fast.
How many episodes are left?
Two episodes left. That's it. That's all we got. And I feel like we're no closer to finding out who the killer is in Wind Gap. Although I would say that episode 6 this past Sunday was probably my favorite episode so far. Would you agree with that, or sounds like a disagreement?
It definitely wasn't my favorite. I think the one before may have been my favorite. I don't know. Nothing lit me on fire this week. I kind of felt like I was just going through the motions. Everything was fine. Everything was good. Fear the Walking Dead was good. Sharp Objects was good, but nothing like I wasn't running to the phone like, oh my god, on anything.
Yeah, I guess there was no real like big reveal on this episode of Sharp Objects. It was just. I don't know, really, really interesting character stuff. We especially dig in a little more and find out more about Camille and Emma. We start to unpack that a little bit more. I was going to ask you, what grade is Emma in? Because, I mean, her partying is out of control. She's just, like, drunk and doing ecstasy and Lord knows what else. I've got a raging party. I thought she was in, like, the eighth grade.
Well, I think she is. Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. I don't think this is, like, I think it's, like, a small town. Like, I don't think this is, like, her friend base. I don't think that was a party for eighth graders because the guy shows up with his girlfriend, the cheerleader. I think they're in high school for sure. So this was definitely a high school party. It was a small town. Apparently, she's hanging out with the older kids.
She knows everybody's dirty little secrets. That whole sequence with her and Camille I really enjoyed where they were roller skating and then they were on the swing and they were spinning around. And it turned really horrific when Camille starts having the weird flashes and sees Emma as like nine other people as they're spinning, most of the people being dead people that she's seeing. So, yeah, it got a little weird. But Emma's character I really like because she seems to change. She can sort of morph into whoever the other person wants her to be. Like when she's with her mom, she is somebody. When she's with Camille, she's somebody else. When she's with her friends, she seems to be someone completely different. I still wonder if like there's some possibility that maybe she's the one behind all this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm convinced it's the mom at this point, but to what degree? Like, I think it's the mom, but I could still think maybe it's Emma and the mom is covering it up. Like, the mom's involved, I have no doubt.
Right.
Like, the mom knows way more than she's letting on. There is no doubt in my mind. So it could be like an Emma or the husband or somebody actually did it. and then she's just covering it up or involved.
I'm expecting some big twist at the end of all of this, so I think we may all be surprised as to how it actually ends up. But to your theory about Adora, she literally knows every person and everything that happens in Wind Gap. I'm positive she knows what's happening. And then you had that weird girl, Ashley. Okay, she's the cheerleader that's dating the young man who's the suspect. And she shows up at the party and says, hey, if you want to know what's going on here, you need to go talk to your mother. And I'm like, yes, exactly. Like, where were you four episodes ago? We need to go talk to her and find out what's going on.
Well, I've been saying that.
You have. Now, Ashley's an interesting character, too, because I don't know if you noticed this, but there's a part of her ear missing. She didn't explain what happened. Camille asked her about it at the party, but then she didn't really give an answer. And Ashley's one of those characters that only shows up for like 5 minutes in each episode, but I feel like she's got a much bigger part to play here than we know.
Yeah, there's definitely something there. Maybe that's why they're only giving us her a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. Was she cleaning up blood in one episode off of her carpet?
Yeah, I think so. I didn't know what that was, and then like they just never mentioned it again.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, we weren't supposed to think it was like from the murders, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But what was it? And then, like you said, now her ear's missing. Maybe that has something to do with.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on in Wind Gap. The place is kooky.
I don't know if I ever want to know what's going on in Wind Gap.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure I want to see how this all plays out.
I don't want to go there for vacation, that's for sure. Camille, by the way, seemed more than excited to get on board the party train with Emma and her friends. She's like, no, I don't want to drink booze and do ecstasy. And then, you know, she's like, okay, twist my arm.
Okay.
But as I pointed out to my wife, I'm like, if anybody deserves to party right now, it's her, because she was just told by her mother 15 minutes ago that her mother doesn't love her or has never loved her. So she got a reason to blow off some steam. We got a new episode coming up Sunday night on HBO. If I don't finish the book first, I'll definitely be checking that out. I'll be checking it out either way. Now, let's talk about Better Call Saul. That happened on Monday night on AMC. That's episode 2 of the new season. I read a little recap of this episode of Better Call Saul, and my favorite line from the recap, the author says something to the effect of, Kim Wexler is now the one who knocks. Like,
nice.
Like, she busted into Howard's office and just let him have it. I loved it. Was that the best scene of this episode?
I did, too. Now that the brother's gone, I think she's my favorite character. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, and that was all interesting the way that played out, because we've been seeing this dynamic between Howard and Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy hates Howard. He's hated him since the first 5 minutes of the first episode.
Right.
But we've never really understood why, because Howard has never done anything. I mean, he seems to be this nicest guy in the world. Everything he does is in the best interest of Chuck. He's been nice. He's done everything for Chuck, yet Jimmy still hates him.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think we kind of knocked down that wall a little bit on Howard.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he's looking like Mr. Innocent Nice Guy, but he's, the way he handled all of that was a little bit conniving, a little bit manipulative.
What was his offer? He was going to give him like $4,000 from Chuck's estate.
Five.
I'm like, yeah.
Right.
When your brother dies and all of his possessions are and his estate are now being sold, like, you know, your family's going to get more than $4,000.
Well, his wife was getting it all. And maybe, you know, maybe that's the way Chuck wanted it. Maybe Chuck wasn't planning on leaving Jimmy anything or whatever. Who knows what that letter says? But just the way he went about all of it, you know. And we were mad. We thought Jimmy was kind of a jerk when he said, you know, I guess that's just something you're going to have to live with. I guess
right.
That's just your cross to bear. Like, yeah, he doesn't trust anything that comes from Howard. And I think we're finally starting to understand why 4 years later.
We also saw in this episode, Don Hector is being treated, I guess, by his own group of doctors at the hospital. I don't know who those men were. They didn't look like doctors to me, but they sure seemed to know what they were talking about. So And then I guess from all of this information, Gus has figured out that the guy, what's his character's name, Nacho, he was the one responsible for Don Hector's stroke in the first place. So so he confronts him at the end. He says, I know what you did, but the Salamancas don't know. And so from now on, you're mine. What does he mean by that? I can't remember back to Breaking Bad and how this all plays out. So what goes on there?
I can't either, and that's what one problem I feel like I'm having with the show. I never expected so much Gus, and I don't remember. I know. I remember that they were enemies, and I remember that Salamanca killed himself and Gus at the same time. That's about all I remember. And Nacho was not on the show.
Okay, that's what I was trying to remember.
So that's all I know. But I guess it means he, you know, he's going to have to work. Now he was trying to get out, and now he's even deeper in. Not
right.
only is he still in, but now he has to snitch or
right.
spy or whatever for Gus.
If we know one thing from this whole Breaking Bad universe, you can't ever get out.
No.
So we saw Mike. I guess he finally explained what the hell he was doing at that factory. He went to his employer, who has offered him a very plum job of doing absolutely nothing and getting paid for it, and saying, no. Here's what I'm going to do instead. I'm going to go around and cause chaos at all these places so that they see my face. And then that way, if something ever comes up, they can put a face with my name, and it appears that I really did work here rather than, you know, I'm just some ghost getting a paycheck, which totally makes sense, I guess. Is that the way? That's not the way I would do it, but does that make sense to you?
I don't completely understand what he's doing or what Gus wants him to be doing or what she wanted him to be doing in the first place. So
the
whole face thing didn't really make that much sense to me.
Well, they just wanted him to have a job. So they named him as the, I don't know, the security
consultant. Right. Okay. He wants
to
look like he really did have this job and he was doing it. So it wasn't just a paycheck for...
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Yeah. But
what is it he's really doing? Because I've completely forgotten what it is he actually does. He works for Gus?
He's working for Gus now, yeah. He's just like he did in Breaking Bad. He just does odd jobs. He goes around and he's a fixer, man. He takes care of stuff. But he's also working for Jimmy, too, I think.
Well, again, that woman, she was on Breaking Bad, and
she
I don't
was.
Remember. Like, yeah, that's...
Well, look, I told
I feel
you,
like you... I feel like we do have to go back and watch the original, because I do feel lost. Like, I'm
now,
not,
now you're with me. I told you last week I was going to go back and watch Breaking Bad, and you're like, don't do it, don't do it.
Don't. Well, the problem is with going back is I didn't know when to stop. I just thought I was going to go back and watch the first season of Walking Dead, and four seasons later,
right.
I'm like, well, I just saw this a couple of summers ago. Why am I watching this again? So what do you do? Breaking Bad, I feel like if you're going to do it, you just might as well know you're in for a five-season commitment.
There you
go. You're
going
to watch the whole thing.
I think I could do it. Jimmy also in this episode goes and gets himself a job, and he very like smoothly talks himself into getting hired at this copy machine factory.
And then calls him moron for hiring him.
Right.
I don't know what he's doing. He's melting down.
I think he was disgusted with the fact that they hired him, that they didn't know anything about him, and they just hired him because he was a smooth talker. And, you know, it worked to his advantage to get the job, but then at the same time, it just made his skin crawl that they hired him not knowing anything about him. He's like, I could be a serial killer for all you know. And we're just getting more and more towards him becoming the character he eventually becomes, I think.
And I think that's exactly what that whole scene was.
Yeah.
It was like he tried to be Jimmy, and then he threw in a little Saul.
Right.
And then he was like, shame on you for that working. But it does work. So, yeah, that's all. I think that's what that whole 15 minutes was.
Right.
It's just we're just evolving into Saul. He hates it.
Uh-huh.
That's something we ever got from Breaking Bad that I kind of love. Like, he doesn't want to be Saul. He doesn't want to do it this way. But this is what worked.
That's right.
If you're gonna be, he tried to play it straight, and it didn't work.
Absolutely. All right. Looking forward to that again Monday night. And in the meantime, we've gotten a new episode of Fear the Walking Dead. We alluded to that a little bit earlier. We have no more Madison on the show. We have no more Nick on this show. So I don't really know how excited I am about this new half season. We're embarking on
it. The new Morgan.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a try.
She wants to clear. Morgan. Clear. Save like, everybody.
I was like, what happened to Morgan? All of a sudden, he's the happiest, jolliest guy in Texas or wherever they are. He's just walking around all chipper. He's got a smile on his face. Like, he was so angry for the last two seasons. Do you think he's actually going to leave, and do you think he's going to take someone with him? Because that could lead to, like, a reverse crossover if someone from this show ends up on The Walking Dead in October.
I don't think so. I think we would have heard something like that. I don't think he's coming back to The Walking Dead.
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. And who are you going to cross over? We've already taken all the main characters, and, I mean, there's only a couple of original characters left.
I still do really like Alicia and Victor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't hurt my feelings. It might be kind of fun to see Victor Strand, you know, at Alexandria or, you know, spending time with Jerry and the King there on The Walking Dead. That would be fun.
I have a hunch that wouldn't work out.
My favorite, though, I laughed out loud at the scene where she was sitting, I can't ever remember her character's name, but she was sitting there listening to the record. The music was like super loud, and Victor had discovered a walker like in the hallway of the house. And so all you hear is this music blaring, and you see him in the background fighting this walker. And he's like pissed drunk, and he's like fighting this walker, like, you know, with his fists, you know. Now, he doesn't stab him in the head or anything. He's just wrestling the guy. And this is all going on like in the background, and she has no idea. I don't know if they meant that to be really funny, but it just cracked me up.
Well, I think that was kind of part of my problem with the episode. Like, I didn't hate it or anything. I'm not sure what the direction is now, and it's so dark and grainy, and it's like, and then that was kind of funny and silly and almost didn't fit. Like, right. I don't know. Like, I'm not real sure, to be honest, about Fear yet this year. I know we've only seen one episode, but.
Right. Are John Dory and June living in a bus?
Yeah, okay. I think so, with the girl.
Yeah, well, she left. Charlie left, and she didn't say anything for the entire episode. I guess she's pretty traumatized by what's happened to her, which I can't blame her. She broke into that house to bring them a book. Was that the book that Nick gave her back last season?
Yeah, or I think she might have.
Mm-hmm.
Given her. I was trying to remember something about Nick was trying to convince her, was doing her even when she was on the other side, and I think she might have brought that book.
I gotcha. Okay. One other thing about this episode that I really liked, the beginning sequence with the walkers in the tornado or the big storm or whatever, and they're just getting like blown away, like walkers are just getting like thrown through the sky. That was a great gag. I really liked that. Like that. That takes me back to like old zombie movie days.
Okay, so you seem to like all the things that make me go, come on. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you keep saying quirky and silly, and that's not what I expect from my Walking Dead. So I didn't hate it. It just seemed out of place. At first, I was like, okay, and I was like, now it's Wizard of Oz with zombies blowing in the wind.
I see your point. It does make you think, like, what exactly direction are they trying to go here? Are we going to be a little more campy, a little more silly this season? Which, that's fine with me. Or we're going to be serious.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly that's fine with you. And I don't know if I'm loving it.
All right, man. I wanted to throw this out to you. I gave Macy this list on the morning show the other day, and we had a pretty interesting discussion about it. So I'll give it to you as well. The 25 best romantic comedies of all time. I won't give you all 25. Don't worry. I'll give you the top five and see if you have any that you want to add or take away. Now, the number one rom-com of all time, according to Vanity Fair, When Harry Met Sally.
That's one of my favorites, for sure.
I told Macy that, and she's like, well, I haven't seen it. And I'm like, well, there's a reason you haven't seen it. It came out in 1989.
So. It's older than you are.
Yeah, a little bit older than her, actually. Yeah, but it's great. It's got, you know, some iconic lines, even all these years later, some very memorable scenes. So, you know.
Yeah, I watched it recently with my wife, and although I think she had seen it at one, you know, probably when she was too young to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But we both, you know, really enjoyed it. I've seen it again. It holds up.
Number two, You've Got Mail from 1998. If you haven't seen this, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan fall in love because they email each other a bunch of times.
I saw it when it came out. I remember it being fine. It didn't leave a lasting impression.
Really? You know what? I've always thought, kind of along the same lines, like, I don't know why this is always thought of as one of the great romantic comedies. It's always been to me like, okay, that's a good movie, but not iconic.
No, I've never even wanted to see it again. I've never went like, oh, I should rewatch that because I remember it being so great, like I did with, you know, When Harry Met Sally. And that was like they're trying to recreate Sleepless in Seattle.
Number three on the list, Clueless from 1995, which is a great movie, of course, but I don't know about top five.
Same thing. I loved it. That's the first time I saw Paul Rudd, and
yeah,
the rest is history. I've been watching him ever since, but best romantic comedy ever, I don't know.
Rolling with the Homies, yeah. love Brittany Murphy in that movie, rest in peace. Alicia Silverstone, yeah, fun stuff there. Number four, Bridget Jones's Diary, which this is the one we got mixed reviews on. We actually got some calls from people that were like, I hate those movies, but then I guess there are people that love them. I don't know. I never loved them.
The first one was, again, fine. Nothing wrong with it. But
I mean, I like Colin Firth a lot, so, you know, I'll go along. And Renee Zellweger I like a lot, too. Let's be honest. I mean, Jerry Maguire is one of my favorite movies. I think Jerry Maguire should be in the top five, but what do I know? And finally, I think you'll love this. Number five on the list, top rom-coms of all time, 10 Things I Hate About You from 1999.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I love you, baby, and if it's quite all right.
Well, flip that list around, and I think you got something.
You're on to something?
No, I don't know if I put it over Harry Met Sally, but I definitely put it over the other one. No, that's one of my favorites.
Oh,
I thought
is.
That one was kind of My Little Secret.
Mm-mm.
Most people have never even heard of that movie. Even people of the right age missed that one. I don't think it did that well in the theater.
Oh, it's great. I mean, of the ones on this list, I've seen it the most. I've probably seen it 20 times. It's the kind of movie where every time it's on HBO, I stop on it, and it's on pretty often. So a very young Heath Ledger, and another conversation kind of spawned from this movie. We both wanted to know whatever happened to Julia Stiles.
Oh, yeah, she bounces around. I've seen her a little bit. She's still doing the Bourne movies, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely doing that.
She was on one of the last seasons of Dexter, but it has been a minute since I've seen her. But she's been around a little bit, not much.
Just for kicks, I'll tell you that Groundhog Day was number six and Notting Hill was number seven.
Where is Love Actually?
You know what? Love Actually is not even on this list.
That movie never gets the respect it deserves.
Oh, this just disgusted me. But I don't know that maybe people don't consider Love Actually to be a romantic comedy. I guess it has to be, right? There's like 10 different romances.
Where else would you put it?
I don't know. I mean, some people consider it a Christmas movie. It's just one of those like ensemble cast things where there's so much happening. I don't know, man. I love it. Hugh Grant's best work, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Football this weekend, man. We got preseason football. The Falcons are playing tonight against the Chiefs. Who you got? The Falcons lost 17-0 last week, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I thought I watched preseason pro football before, but the whole thing where the starting lineup doesn't play kind of confused me. So we sat down and got excited to watch the Falcons, and then some guy I've never heard of. It's terrible throwing the ball, so we lost. So I'm not even, are they going to start playing the starters this week or what?
Yeah, that's normally how it works. I mean, you've got four preseason games, so typically in the first one, you don't get very much of the starters, if any. The second one, you get a little more. Now, the third game, you'll get most of the starting lineup playing most of the game. And then the fourth game, they kind of revert back to, let's go with the rookies and the no-names again because we want to rest the starters for the real season. So just kind of depends, but I'm just happy to have football on the TV. And a week from Saturday, you get your first taste of college football this season as Coach Bobo's Colorado State Rams take on Hawaii. Who you got?
I'll go Rams. Definitely. Is that not, they're not, no good Thursday game first this year? Isn't usually Thursday the first taste we get at college?
They did this last year, and I think maybe the year before too, but so this, I guess, is the new thing now where you get what's called week zero. So it's Saturday games. There's like four or five games a week from Saturday, and that's like the first official Saturday of college football. None of the games are usually any like blockbuster game that you really care about, but you just get a little taste of it. And then the Thursday after that, you get some more games, and then the following Saturday is when you get everybody. So, and of course, you know, Georgia and Austin Peay, September 1st at 3:30. Go Dogs!
Yeah, I don't think that one's going to be much to write home about.
Well, we'll get your prediction on that maybe next week, but it's probably along the lines of 72-3. So
I was going to say, immediately the Rocky III quote comes into my head. Prediction, pain.
what does Mickey say to Rock? He'll kill you to death inside of three rounds.
That's it.
That's what we'll do to Austin Peay. We'll kill him to death inside of three rounds. All right, man. It's been fun. I will talk to you next week.
All right.